More of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Teich. Landscapes often serve as the inspiration for fiction. Some even have names as evocative as their geology. Wisconsin has its Driftless region, but perhaps no setting has as intriguing a moniker as the rock formations, valleys, and buttes that make up the Badlands. And so when Milwaukee writer Tom Beal set out to write his first book, he found the Badlands of his home state, Montana, were as rich to mine for metaphors as they are literally to mine for dinosaur fossils. The result is the new collection, Badlands. The book consists of short stories, although they are all connected by the same characters and place. Beal tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce why the Badlands were an appropriate setting for his coming-of-age stories.
It was always pretty clear to me that the Badlands had, as you said, sort of a dangerous beauty to them. The book opens up with a kind of a legend that the narrator heard about an amateur paleontologist that goes out into the hills and never comes back as he becomes a prey for a mountain lion, a cougar. And immediately, I think that was something that struck me, or when I think about of wide open wild spaces like that, is that, you know, there's a power there that we're susceptible to and that we have to be humbled to. And the characters kind of reflect that in their lives. And as beautiful as and wonderful as their childhoods and growing up may be, there is always something not very pleasant or dangerous lurking inside of them, as there may be in most of us. There are just things that we may show on the outside, but inside we have all kinds of capabilities of doing things that may be cruel and harmful and hurtful to others. There's a real roughness in the Badlands, and there's a lot of badness in good people.
All of the stories feature the central protagonist, Matthew Davis. What is Matthew learning as he's looking at these very specific points, these very specific memories?
He's learning a whole lot of things. He's learning, in some ways, he's learning all of the things inside of him that he's not necessarily proud of. He's learning to celebrate his own childhood and his own growing up experience, and he's learning to value his friendships, but he's also looking back at himself and really recognizing that he's done things to people that, you know, are completely against what he knows he should be. You know, he's got badness in him too. So there's beauty in him and in all of his friends. And at the same time, there are those things that are very real, questionable, and that he's not going to deny. You know, he does things to people that he's not proud of, that he doesn't like. And he begins to understand that there's a process to becoming a good person. And I think that's kind of what he's learning along the way. And he also learns that probably one of the most important things in life is to wait, perhaps, for somebody to forgive you. And I think that's part of it, too. And I think along the way, it's being able to forgive himself for various things that happen, you know, throughout the course of the stories. And so at the very end, it's not until the very, very, very end when he's a grown man, when he kind of begins to really accept himself and understand that these things were all part of the course of life. But I think a lot of it is about redemption, forgiveness, and understanding how to be a decent man.
I can see all of us having, you know, these moments where we look back on things we've done and not be proud of. But why explore that in such depth in all of these stories?
To me, it's what makes Matthew human. I mean, in a lot of the incidents that happened to him along the way, you know, they're not necessarily earth-shattering things. They're just things that boys, kids, you know, young men and girls do as they grow up in life. I think he really understands that even sometimes small things can be very hurtful to people, and he seems to be very sensitive to that, and he kind of wants to, you know, reach inside of himself a little bit and deal with it, and maybe, you know, offer a bit of an apology to those that may have been harmed along the way. I think, in a sense, it's a matter of going deeper into the character. And to me, I guess that's where the interest of the story lay.
As a child, Matthew doesn't have this ability to really, you know, or maybe disregards the ability to think through to the end what is going to be the consequence of this action. Yet after the fact, he really is fairly introspective. Is this where it comes from, kind of having that time and distance as a grown man to reflect?
Absolutely. Yeah, he's a shallow SOB is what he calls himself at various points. And that's not Matthew, the 18-year-old or the 17-year-old or the 16-year-old talking there. That's, you know, that's the 48-year-old man who's, you know, who's looking back. and says, you know, I was a shallow SOB, or this was the cruelest thing I ever did to a human being, or I promised I'd never do another cruel thing to a person again as long as I lived. But he realizes that he could never hold up to that promise.
He's also looking back on the friendships he had throughout his childhood and reading about his relationships, especially with his best friend, Idaho Wells. What is so special about that friendship that Matthew and Idaho have?
You know, there's a natural, almost spiritual bond between the two of them. And I think, you know, Matthew often refers to Idaho as the thing that he loves best in the world outside of family. So it's that one step away from family love, really, is a friendship love. And it's a human bond that comes to them very, very naturally. And they share all of the questions of life together. And, you know, they tend to push some boundaries. You know, they kind of go through the paths of life that put them, you know, virtually on the edge of life and death. And I think that in the end, that's probably the bonding, is that they experience life's, you know, ranges, unlike Matthew has any other person to share those things with. So, you know, it's just that natural bonding process that occurs. I think that most people can probably look at a person from their past who may be that person who they love better than anything else in the world outside the family.
Idaho is in many ways the instigator of many of these shenanigans that the boys get into. He does have this kind of violent streak to him, but at the same time, he's also a tremendously forthright and sensitive kid.
Mm-hmm.
How do these two characteristics kind of fight it out within Idaho when he's faced with some of these situations where he should turn back? You know, he maybe wants to, but he doesn't.
You know, not to sound too, you know, esoteric about it or anything, but I guess there's a connection there to the title of the stories, to the Badlands themselves, in which there's a lot of beauty in what is not necessarily apparent, right, to, you know, the initial viewing of things. Idaho, you know, as a kid who does get into a lot of trouble, you know, is very mischievous and precocious, and yet, you know, he's the one who has the much higher moral ability or capability between the two of them. Matthew is more of the, you know, the kid who kind of goes along with things, and I think, you know, Idaho leads him along. But it is Idaho the one who's not afraid to say, you know, I love you, man. I, you know, you're my best friend. I love you. He's not afraid to cry. You know, Idaho is the toughest of the two of them, and he's also the one who's not afraid to cry and show his emotions. So maybe that's kind of what, you know, makes him the tough guy, is that he's tough all the way around, not just tough in terms of a fighter. He's tough with his emotions, and that means he's able to show them without feeling inhibited or judged. He just wears it on his sleeve. So all those emotions, he is what he is, and the goodness in Idaho is just as obvious, I think, as the what might be perceived as the bad. It's not that Idaho's bad, it's just that he gets into trouble a little bit. And he's, you know, he comes from a different background. He's had a rougher life. He comes from a family that's not all together. Matthew doesn't often understand that, because Matthew takes family for granted, isn't able to totally walk around in Idaho's shoes, although he gets it. He understands it. It is a learning process for him along the way. And maybe when you asked me earlier what is it that, you know, that Matthew learns, I think he really learns how to respect Idaho and understand that, you know, not everybody has the same road in life, and it can be more difficult for others.
You write children and the way they perceive the world and situations really well, and I wonder if that comes from being a teacher.
Well, yeah, I think to a certain degree it does. I guess, you know, as a teacher, you're sort of always somewhat stuck in that adolescent mindset to a degree. So although times have changed so much, the kids I'm around today certainly speak an entirely different language than I spoke. But I think at the same time, there's a universal quality to teenagers that will never change. And yeah, so I am connected in that way as a teacher. It does influence that voice, I think, a lot. But it also comes from the fact that if there were experiences in my life or friends in my life, I would go back to that time, to the friends who made the most, you know, indelible impression on me I would go back to that time period and that place. So that's another reason why I think, as you say, if the voices do resonate, that they're very real for me.
What was the most difficult of these situations that Matthew finds himself in to write?
Oh, the most difficult of them all has got to be called The Flower Devourer. I think that has got to be the most difficult, painful story of them all. And that's simply because, it's at that point where Matthew, the kid is a normal, everyday, we'd call him a decent kid, a good kid. But he turns into a bully, and he and Idaho gang up on a young girl, a classmate, whom they don't like, and they don't think that she's not cool, and therefore they think that for some reason they have the right to belittle her. And they turn into bullies. I mean, this is the same. This is just what, even as a teacher and always being aware of bullying that happens at school, I almost always want to say to people, it's like, well, first of all, look inside of yourself. I mean, at some point, we probably have done this to other people. What's hard about it is that, to me, there's a section in that story that's very visceral in what they do to her in words. What we would say now, we would probably call it hate speech. It's rough. Anyway, I do not like to read it only because I obviously root for Matthew, and I really see a very kind of verbally violent side that comes out in him there. And therefore, it's very nearly abusive. That's painful for me to read. I think it's an honest story, but I think it was probably the most painful moment for me in the book is when he and Idaho gang up on Monica Rose.
Bullying is such a topical issue right now in our society. Yet what we haven't mentioned is that these stories are actually taking place in the Vietnam era. Mm-hmm. But when I was reading it, I could find so many aspects that resonated, whether it was this us versus them mentality between people who disagreed over the war, or with things like how young people can be so cruel to each other. Were you consciously creating a parallel between what's going on today in our culture?
No, I don't think there was anything about what's going on today in our culture. Certainly, aggressiveness against others is an ongoing thing and will always be there. So that connection between bullying others in 1968 or 1970 in comparison to now is very much the same. So there's very little difference. But that contrast that you talk about, the us versus them, that goes back to, a very personal experience. My memories of growing up and being a high school kid at that time period in the Vietnam era, 1968 to 1972, we put ourselves on the side of the anti-war movement, and I did personally. That set us against, I think, kind of the norm of the culture. And so, therefore, there is a bit of an us versus them element in the book because I remember that to me that was a truthful thing, that if you had long hair in those days, at that time period, you were laughed at and scoffed at and mocked and called a girl. For some reason, this was a very difficult thing for men to deal with. They couldn't, it was hard for them to, for some reason, accept boys that looked different than what they were supposed to look like. There certainly were lots of times in my own personal experience when I got really mad and really angry at people that would denounce Martin Luther King and rock and roll music and call anybody who opposed the war a pinko and use all kinds of slanderous terms against Native Americans. And there is a relatively, ignorant side, I think, to society wherever you are. And I think, not that Matthew's better than anybody else, but, I think he was protesting against some of that narrow, what he looked at as narrow-mindedness.
Well, Tom, this is your first book. What was it like going through the process of putting this together?
Well, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the whole process. I mean, it was a refuge. It took me a long, long time to do so. But it was nice to have a goal. It was nice to I think one of the things that I like about it is it's sort of nice to teach literature and then try to do it also and practice what you preach a little bit, put your money where your mouth is. It's definitely a labor of love, and it took me, I guess sometimes I think that if you're going to write, at some point you're going to go back to where you started. You're going to go back to your roots, and that's always been such an important part of my own roots is that place of Montana. And therefore, that part of the process was wonderful, just going back and reliving that time, that town. And the historical time period, I mean, just going back to that, the Vietnam era, that was so informative to me and to my, you know, to my family and my real family, you know. I mean, it was in a very interesting time period. So it was fun just to go back. And, of course, it always gave me something to do in the wee hours of a Saturday night when everybody else was asleep.
Well, Thomas Beale, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us about Badlands.
Stephanie, thank you. The pleasure was mine.
Writer Tom Beale is the author of Badlands, a collection of stories. It's his first book. He's a teacher in Milwaukee Public Schools, and he's also a playwright, having written four plays. He'll be doing a reading at Boswell Book Company tomorrow night. You can find more information at wuwm.com/lake effect. Tom Beale spoke with Stephanie Lecce. So what does dispute resolution in medicine have to do with terrorism and disaster preparedness? On tomorrow's show, a national expert and Milwaukee native talks about the surprising link between those two fields. I'm Mitch Teich. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and I sure hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. We're NPR in Milwaukee. And you know, you can listen back to any of today's segments or segments from previous shows by going to the archive on our website. You can find that 24/7 at WUWM.com/Lake Effect. Thanks again for listening. Stay tuned. It's 11 o'clock, and Fresh Air is next.